for more than 6.
Best. Like, it's my favorite. It's. And the single best movie ever made about any of the Commando missions, The Train. Le Train. It's.
The others?
I like the episode of Band of Brothers with Bucky in it.
Bucky. Fuck. It's December 14th. I'm listening to April 1944 of the book. It's the 10th chapter of it. The 10th month, except I read they went in May 1943 on a boat called the Santa Rosa. So it's really the 12th month. Of the war. It's December 14th. It's December 1914th. I met Olivia Barnes. Her ma calls her Liv on the show, podcast. She's my great niece, great, great niece. She knew who I was. She liked Le Train, movie about Paris. Olivia was here 4 hours and 4 and a half hours ago. 162 centimeters, blue eyes, brown hair to the shoulders. She was nervous, I think scared. Her hand was shaking. She knew who I was. Maybe it wasn't scared. I don't know if it was scared. She said she was glad about me. About meeting me. She said she was glad. I couldn't. Oh, shit. December 14th. I'm gonna listen to April 1944. Then it's dinner. Lasagna with Frank. You'll like it, it's good for you. Then I'm gonna call Steve. I'm gonna call Steve. Then sleep. And I got 2 more days for the rest of this fucking thing. April 1944.
trip on a train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream. Moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam, same old dream. With every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you.
April 2nd. Very poor weather. Not much progress to our egress coordinates. We are perhaps 40 miles from the base. Yesterday, to give the fellows a chance for rest, we got out of the rain in what we thought was an abandoned barn. And as it turns out, it is a barn the owner is still using. A little guy who discovered us, and at first looked so afraid I think he thought we were there to rob him, or worse. But after seeing our walk and talk and American flag, and the fact that we are... Come on.
You have reached the voicemail box of...
Rogers.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Steve? It's me. April. Occupied Czechoslovakia. April 2nd. Very poor weather. Not much progress to our egress coordinates. We are perhaps 40 miles from the base. Yesterday, to give the fellows a chance for rest, we got out of the rain in what we thought was an abandoned barn. And as it turns out, it is a barn the owner is still using. A little guy who discovered us. And at first looked so afraid I think he thought we were there to rob him, or worse. But after seeing our walk and talk and American flag, and the fact that we are all in awful shape, he was very friendly. Of course, I suppose he would be, even if we had been there as enemies. No doubt there are millions of people everywhere doing whatever they can to simply avoid the attention of guys with guns. It is hard to think of regular folks as enemies. They didn't ask for this, same as we didn't. He insisted that we stay in his house with his wife and two small daughters. None of them can speak a lick of English, but Monty with his German and Gabe with his bit of Polish were able to communicate okay. They figured out that Jan's son was conscripted by the Krauts and sent to Stalingrad in 1942, and they have not heard anything from him since. The awful thing is, Alzbieta, Jan's wife, did not even look sad necessarily when she showed me her son's photograph. Just a terrible kind of empty, as if even the idea of having hope that he is still alive has not even occurred to her. They fed us, even though they have very little themselves, and Jones had an extra couple D-rations, and I had half a pack of charms, which we gave to the girls, Karolina and Aliska, who are so skinny. But at the end of the day, they are still little girls, and there is not much a fellow with a kid sister needs to know how to say in Czech to be able to make a couple little girls laugh. I taught them some hand-clapping games. I have no letter paper, otherwise I would write to Curly now and tell her I taught him all the silly words to Ms. Mary Mack that we thought up together when she was 10 or so. This is an accomplishment considering they don't speak any English. It took some work, as my left side hurts quite a bit, and I had to teach him with just one hand. We also gave Elspeta a couple of our shoots that she can use to make warmer clothes for her family. She was a mother to all of us, nursing the rest of them as sweetly as their own mothers would, even humming a little. And even if it wasn't a tune Annie Yoss knew, just the idea of it, of a sweet, kind woman treating us like her own sons, was almost like a magic spell that made all of us boys again, instead of tired soldiers. She also washed my coat and tried to sew my arm inside up, but it is doing all right and does not seem to be infected, so I just had her bandage me back up. I cut and braided up some of my parachute cord to make a jump rope for the little girls, and me and Steve did a demonstration for them that got a lot of laughs. I think Steve had the most fun out of anybody with that, seeing as his lungs were never good enough to play jump rope with Curly, and even though he's used to being big and strong when it comes to being a soldier on the battlefield, I think it's the little things he can do now, like jumping rope without needing a nebulizer. Those are what somehow still surprise him. Jan convinced the storm will clear tonight, so the plan is to leave before dawn tomorrow. Sleeping under a roof does wonders for a man's spirits. But more important, these people are so kind and generous while being so very poor. It reminds you why we must keep going and soldier on, no matter what. We are also leaving Jan one of our service pistols and some ammo. The Krauts took his shotgun, and he has nothing for protection other than a shovel. If only we had thought to take a gun from the Hydra base. As if Jan is discovered with a goddamn Colt 1911, he will be in serious danger. But worse if he has nothing at all. April 7th. All of us dead on our feet, but back here in jolly old England finally. Hardly any sleep at all since leaving Jan's farm, as the others were terribly ill, and it was just me and Steve to keep watch and help them along, and in Monty and Jim's case, carry him. Of course, we also ran out of rations, and somehow Steve can keep going and going, but I was out cold the minute we made it to the transport plane and slept all the way to England. Woke up when we landed, yesterday morning, and back to sleep in the car from the airfield back to London. SSR tried to make me debrief until Steve told them I'd been shot, and then I got ordered to see a doctor, but the last place I want to be is in a goddamn fucking hospital clinic on an exam table getting shots. So I played hooky and somehow found my way to our billet in Grosvenor Street. So tired, I do not even remember the walk. It felt like every ounce of me had been scraped out. Ate at least 5 pounds of eggs, sausage, bread, jam, and 2 bottles of milk, and then slept for a day and a half, which is today. Not just mail, but a box from Ma waiting. April 8th. Here is a terrible thing I have not gotten out of my head. When Jan first brought us into his house and introduced us to his wife, Elspeta, she was working on making a soup. Everybody just sort of collapsed at the benches around their table, except Steve, who went to help Jan with firewood, and we all just sat there quietly, we were so tired, and in the fella's case, so ill. Well, I perked up when I heard some noise from another room, and that's when I saw the girls, who I guess had been in bed or hiding or something. So I got up to give them some of my extra candy. And they weren't scared of me, exactly. Just maybe not sure what to think, with a bunch of men in their little house. But I heard a little choked-off noise, and looked over at Elspeta, and she had the strangest expression on her face. She had been paring potatoes, and had her knife in her hand so tightly her hand was white behind the dirt. I gave the girls the candy, and said hello, and showed them my picture of Curly from her first communion that I keep on me. And I don't think the girls understood she's my sister. But when I looked back at Elspeta, she was going back to the potatoes. I think she was ready to knife me if I'd so much as startled those little girls. What kind of world is this that I gotta have proof of giving a damn about my kid sister before a mother thinks her children are safe? I can't stop thinking about it. She would have done it. She would have jumped at me with that knife. Forget the 6 men all double the size of her, easily, with guns. Forget that most of us were sick as dogs. She would have done it if she thought I was going to hurt her girls. I cannot imagine my own mother being in this miserable pit of a continent and having to make that decision in defense of Rebecca. I am sick of thinking of how many mothers have had to do it and not just prepare themselves to. Sure, we men are shooting each other dead on the battlefield, and that is a senseless, awful waste. But there are mothers and girls who don't have guns to fight back, yet are forced to fight for their lives, same as anyone. Before all this, I never thought much of Father Cleary talking about how men are born bad. But everything I have seen and witnessed, and even done, makes it hard to argue. I remember one of his homilies about it. Their feet run the evil, and they hasten to shed innocent blood. Wasting and destruction are their paths. Mankind is a piss-poor lot, I think. April 9th. We got a telegram from a pilot captain in the 350th Bomb Squadron. Dear Cap and Commandos, stop. Zero planes lost, stop. Hell of a job, stop. We will do our part for you anytime. They are based not far from London, and it'd be goddamn crackerjacks if we got to meet them. I know Steve's got that notion percolating in his head, all right. He has already got us some R&R through at least the 16th. We all lost weight, even Steve. An SSR medical officer put his foot down when he saw the condition we were all in, even though I am healing up all right. And Carter is on his side as well, the sly thing, as she is posing it as a morale opportunity. Which really means we'll get to meet the bomb squadrons all right, so long as we let the newsmen take our photographs doing it. Only, I think they want to wait until we don't look like we are at death's door. My birthday box from Ma, Dad, and Curly. 3 pairs of socks, a new Philip Marlowe, 2 bags of licorice, and a box of sugar cookies that were only a bit stale, but that hardly matters. Shared them with Steve, as he is as homesick as I am for Ma's cooking. Also a mess of newspaper articles Curly has been saving about Steve, me, and the others. Apparently everyone is going really wild at home about us. So this morning I sent home a couple medals and my shoulder patches from the 3rd and the 36th for Curly to have, as I think she will get a real kick out of showing those to her friends, and will no doubt make a production out of it. I also sent her 2 embroidered handkerchiefs that Elzbieta gave me that were done by her girls, although I am keeping the one that she did herself. She added the date and a little American flag, and God bless you in Czech, I asked the Czech pilot Monty knows to translate, before we left, and I found it in my pocket after she washed and repaired my coat for me. It is just a bit of cloth, but it feels like armor somehow. April 12th. Steve came back from briefing today with the look on his face like he gets when he's struggling over getting the shading exactly right on a drawing. Or perhaps if paint's not doing what it's supposed to. He stares at it like it's a puzzle to be solved, like me in crosswords. Until he takes a brush and does some small little movement that means nothing to me, but suddenly whatever he's working on comes perfectly into focus. A mess of color suddenly transforms into something. Anyhow, in the kitchen I was making roast potatoes and chicken. This is how I'm spending my extra pay as a staff sergeant. Real food and as much of it as I can eat, instead of what Dum Dum calls splashing rations on account of how they come out. Poor bastard. I have not had dysentery since Italy, thank Christ for that luck. And Steve walks in, all quiet, hands in his pockets just like it was back home when he knew I didn't need, and nobody wants, his help in the kitchen, but felt like he ought to be doing something anyway. So I ask him, what do you want, pal? He made a bit of small talk. How's your arm? And your side? You sure you're all right? And I rolled my eyes at him and used my bad arm, should I call it my right arm and my all right arm? To pick up the roast pan and put it on the stove and tell him to spit it out. And so he says, we're going back to France. I knew straight away he didn't mean we like the commandos. And the way he said it, the solemn finality of it, it sent chills down my spine. I didn't say anything at all, but looked up and he just nodded. Of course, it's not like we didn't know it was coming, but seeing the jeeps crowding these skinny streets, and the thousands of guys in army green, and even seeing for ourselves what the bombers are doing, it is different from hearing Steve say, resolved, that soon the invasion the whole world has been waiting for is going to happen. And while we have hardly been sitting on our hands, in fact, I wouldn't have minded any sitting on my hands, it feels like now it's a real fight. He doesn't know any more about it. Not what we'll be doing or where exactly or when. Other than, I assume it will need to be once the channel calms down a bit. But knowing for sure, for certain, that it is around the corner makes me feel like the world itself has taken a deep breath, the deepest possible breath. And the exhale will be a terrible storm and fury. April 14th. Sleep in when the door bursts open and the fellows stream into the room, all in full service uniforms, and somewhere Gabe found a trumpet, which he plays very poorly. And in the middle of all this is Steve with a box of medals and a signed paper, a purple heart and a bronze star for Czechoslovakia. I never heard anything so stupid in my life, and I think that is precisely why Steve did it. Medals for getting shot and for not getting sick? Ridiculous. Anyhow, Steve insists that I pin them to my uniform as is. That's what sleeping in just your PT shorts gets you. And as a bit of a joke, the other fellow stood at attention while Steve read the citation, which he somehow was able to keep doing even while I was trying to wrestle him down. At any rate, it was a good laugh for all of us, especially now that the fellows are recovered. After a while, they did leave. And then Steve gave me something else. Two drawings from memory of Genevieve. One small enough to go in my breast pocket, and the other to stay in my footlocker where the commandos will not find it. In one of them, she is serious, all concentration, exactly as I remember when we were setting out for the Ritz that day. In the other, he captured her funny little smile, the one where you sense that she is having a private laugh all her own, a joke just for her, that on the occasion where she catches your eye and you are let into the joke, just for a second, it feels like a prize in itself. I have no idea how he did it, how he can put a pencil to a piece of paper with nothing on it and end up with a person's real self on a page. I must have stared at the drawings for 5 minutes before he cleared his throat and reminded me he was still there. Fortunately, Steve is a better man than I am. God knows I have been merciless with him mooning over his girl. And he simply told me, happy late birthday, and left me alone for a while. Of course, I know it is not the same for me as Steve has with his Amazon. For one, they actually know each other. A few weeks and a couple of moments alone aren't the same. I think it is more the hope of what it could be, the idea of next year, the idea of the kind of person another version of me could be worthy of one day. April 16th. Got a note to go to Mr. Stark's laboratory, which is in the country. I mentioned it to Dum Dum, who had the idea of borrowing a jeep instead of taking a train. Well, he assumed I could drive, and I assumed he could. We've seen it done enough, but why the hell would a man from Brooklyn ever learn how to drive? And I guess Boston is the same. So, we walked up to the jeep, and both tried to get in the second seat. And then once we figured it out, we decided to try a game to see who would get to drive. I suggested taking pebbles and seeing who could hit the street sign from 20 feet, best of 10. But Dum Dum just rolled his eyes. Very fair contest there, Sarge. And just held out his hands for rock, paper, scissors. And the bastard won best of 3. So, driving was his job, and I don't think we've ever had more fun or been more afraid for our lives. You get used to them driving on the wrong side here, but in Dum Dum's case, trying to figure out how to work the transmission took up most of his attention, and he kept driving to the right side, I suppose subconsciously. In any case, we escaped London alive and made it to Grosvenor House an hour or so late. Not that Mr. Stark would notice. He seems to keep to a different sun and moon than the rest of us. What he wanted did not take long. I think it was just an excuse to have some company, especially enlisted who know how to have a good time. And then we took him with us to the pub. He will forget to eat food, but he's always willing to go for a couple of pints. April 19th. French phrase books, memorized in maps, issued new gear, training exercises planned. None of this could fool anybody for a second, even if Steve hadn't already told me. We went through a day of this. And then, at a Negro enlisted club we have taken to go into. No trouble for Gabe, and as it turns out, the Negroes are more friendly to white soldiers than we probably deserve, and certainly more than if it was the other direction. Plus, they are more shocked and excited to meet Gabe than they are any of us. I think that's the way it probably ought to be. So Jim comes back with a round and waits for Steve to take a drink, to ask, blandly as only Jim can, "So, when we invade France next month, will we be airborne or seaborne?" Steve about chokes. And while he is coughing, gives Jim that stern, disapproving look that I know very well, and also delivers a nice two-finger salute, as Monty calls it. And well, that's about the most god-awful, un-American thing I've ever seen him do, and I say so. "Rosie the Riveter would be goddamn fucking ashamed," says Dum Dum. And Monty, "If this is your attempt at being Captain Britain, save it. We don't need a traitor to his own kind." And Gabe, "I don't see how you can lead us to Berlin if you can't even flip the bird correctly, Cap." and Dernier, a contemptuous look, and La Barbe. And by then, Steve had recovered enough to tell us to go fuck ourselves in all the ways a proud son of Brooklyn knows how. He's not a total lost cause. But even after that, of course, Jim gives him a look, reminding him of the real question at hand. And Steve just says, "They don't know yet, and for fuck's sake, we can't talk about it here." And Gabe says, as dry as a goddamn Sahara, "All due respect, Cap, but somehow I doubt there's many German spies here in the Color Club." And Steve's cornered, and it's a damn good argument, so he told us what he knows, which is not much. Just that it may be Dunkirk or Calais or another place altogether that they are playing very close to the vest about, and that with our primary mission's current difficulties, that it is likely we are going to be attached to a Ranger company. But that's all he knew. Ranger company is not great news. It means seaborne, and I have done enough of those. By the look on his face, so has Dum Dum. April 23rd. Field exercises. Only they are not so much field exercises as town exercises. We have been attached to a rifle company for training. It seems they are expecting this will be a lot of house-to-house combat. I cannot believe they would put Captain America on that except as a stunt. It is good for us to train, anyway. I haven't done house-to-house anything since Italy. But I admit that there is an awful, aching fear in my gut about going back on the line, back at the front, fighting battles that never end, mortars and foxholes. And while I am ashamed to even admit it, I guess it means I've really gone soft. I think at least part of that fear is reasonable. On our missions, they are planned, and we have the element of surprise, and we're attacking fixed positions. On the line, all it takes is a mortar hitting the wrong place, and not even Steve can survive that. Anyway, it is very late. This is a calm before the storm, and rather than resting, I'm finding that I can't stay asleep more than a couple of hours at a time. At this rate, I will be so tired when we are invading France that I will fall asleep on the beachhead. April 25th. Mail. I have a strange mix of correspondence these days. Two from my little redhead Valentine, Ms. Clemens. That is how she signs them, to be proper. One from Margaret Miller. One from Teddy. One from Castellano. And one each from Annie, meaning Tech Sergeant Cliff Ainsley, and Jean Plinsky. Plinsky, it should surprise no one to hear, is a terrible letter writer. His was about 4 lines long. "Sarge, we are all getting our drinks paid for. The minute anybody hears we know you. So give them krauts a bit of hell, don't forget the little people, and give my name to Jean Tierney if you meet her, or to Duke Ellington if he needs a harmonica." Hell, I didn't know we were supposed to be rubbing elbows with Jean Tierney or anybody else. All we are doing is jumping out of planes, or training to. I know Steve has met Betty Grable and Marlene Dietrich and Rita Hayworth, some friend he is. But I guess that was when he was running around America with tights on and not here. Bastard. At any rate, it is a good thing Plinsky's a whiz at fixing things. Otherwise, I don't know how a man who can't spell the lady's name who has the same name as him would get on in life. Of course, with Plinsky, all he needs is 2 seconds to make you laugh, and then you'd do anything for him. I guess that's what they call charisma. Anyway, the fellows are all okay, and Castellano says Fisher's still a top-notch CO. Of course, we only knew him briefly before Rocca Varigotti, but then again, it does not take much combat to find out if a rifle company CO is worth anything, and Fisher is a man I'd follow again. April 29th. Down at Barking Cat. I will never understand Brits. As we usually do on Fridays, if we can get away, as it is a small place, a bit out of the way, that is next to Monty's old club, called Spade and Saddle, which has shut down since the war and getting bombed. Well, the Barking Cat, a real dive, has taken up the mantle of Spade and Saddle, a degenerate den of gamblers and gossips, but a good bit of fun, according to Monty, as well as being its normal self. In other words, a bar with 2 kinds of bitter, awful food, except for shepherd's pie and fried fish, and a mess of rough-and-tumble types not even Monty can understand when they speak, except they all say it's English. One of the fellows there goes by Reg, about our age, but he does war work, and recently has decided running a stud game is a fine way to scam the Yanks out of our dollars. I think everybody that sits down to play poker must believe he's a hustler, because we all of us spent about an hour playing dumb, asking for an explanation of the rules, and Monty doing his best to translate, "Oi, mate, what got a bit of oi low think you play?" We played for a few hours. Between the 7 of us, lost at least $150 in all, except Jim, who actually did not know how to play. Only he came away plus $75. April 30th. Made to go to medical today, along with all the rest of the commandos. We all have clean bill of health, other than the nurse giving me a look I have never gotten in my life from a dame. You're a little scrawny to be a howling commando, aren't you? Me, scrawny? I would have laughed, except I was on an exam table, and mainly trying to keep my head. I think I said, anybody looks scrawny next to Captain America, ma'am. Anyway, there was a mirror, and I've got eyes. Nurse, manly pride, what's that? Tyson isn't exactly wrong. All this running around Europe does wonders for a man watching his figure, I guess. According to her, I'm 147 pounds, and that is down more than 30 pounds from before I shipped last year. Anyway, I have orders to eat more. Ha, if I could, I would. If this invasion happens, that does not seem likely.